Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm happy to have an old young friend of mine on the show today. His name is Jim Joyce, and he's the executive director of the Myasthenia Gravis Association of Western Pennsylvania. Years ago, Jim and I worked together at Exela Health, and now he's taken over the helm of this wonderful organization serving all of Western PA. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you, Jen. Really appreciate it.
Why don't you tell everybody at home a little bit about myasthenia gravis in case this is the first time they're hearing about it?
Sure. So, myasthenia gravis is a chronic neuromuscular disease. It's an autoimmune disorder where we don't really know what the cause of it is. And unfortunately, right now, there is no cure. But organizations like ours are working very hard to try to help patients with this diagnosis and hopefully eventually one day find a cure. Our organization was founded in 1955, so we've been around for a very long time. And we currently serve somewhere between 500 and 600 patients in 26 different counties in Western Pennsylvania, and then parts of New York, Ohio, West Virginia, and Maryland. And it's very interesting. I think our name is getting out there a little bit more. Over the last year, we've had calls from all over the United States, and actually even calls from Europe and Australia, looking for support and other resources related to myasthenia gravis.
Wow, that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. So, why don't you teach us a little bit about what you've learned about the disease? What are some of the early signs and symptoms?
Sure. So one of the interesting things is that myasthenia gravis is also called the snowflake disease because it really doesn't present the same way in two different people. It presents very differently for everyone. But some people may have issues with their voluntary muscle movements. And that would include everything from their facial muscles drooping, maybe their eyelids drooping, having issues with swallowing or talking, maybe with some of their appendages, maybe having weakness in their arms and legs, difficulty walking or getting up. So, as you can see, with issues with their voluntary muscles, that can make it very hard for them just to operate on a day-to-day basis. So it can be a very debilitating disease, but fortunately, there are some treatments that can help people lead a pretty normal life once they contract the illness.
So let's talk about testing. So, when I suspect I have something or a doctor suspects something, walk us through the testing piece of this.
Sure. So usually what will happen is they'll maybe go to their doctor, their primary care doctor or someone else because they're having this this weakness or maybe they have maybe they are having some of the facial drooping. Some people are initially concerned they may be having a stroke or some other neurologic condition like that. And really sometimes myasthenia gravis takes a long time to diagnose because doctors are ruling out other conditions before they actually get to myasthenia gravis. So usually the easiest way and the best way to diagnose someone with myasthenia gravis is with blood work. Blood work comes back. It has certain products related to myasthenia gravis in the results, and that's how most people are diagnosed with the disease.
And most of the time this is they're going to follow up with a neurologist or specialist like that. Are there specialists for this in the Pittsburgh area?
Yeah, absolutely. We work with a number of different offices, as you had said, neurologists who specify in myasthenia gravis. Myasthenia gravis is a very rare disorder. So really even neurologists within a neurology office will specialize even further down into myasthenia gravis. So we work with, like I said, with probably a half dozen offices throughout Western Pennsylvania, Westmoreland County, Allegheny County, Beaver County, Butler. So that's one of the things a lot of times people will call our office. They may be newly diagnosed. They've been working primarily with their primary care physician, and they're really looking for that next level of assistance. So we have a number of different physicians that we feel very comfortable in referring people to, and that's usually how we get involved, making that connection, making sure they have their visits put in place, and making sure they're going on in the right direction in terms of getting their myasthenia gravis treated.
How was your organization founded?
So we were actually founded, like I said, back in 1955, and it was interesting. There's a gentleman whose daughter contracted this very rare illness. Obviously, back then you didn't have as much technology available to you. So he just started to research it, discovered that she had myasthenia gravis, and put an ad in the newspaper saying, "Hey, if anyone else has this disease, we're going to start having these meetings, almost like a support group meeting. And it really built from there. So it was a father looking out for his teenage daughter that sort of founded our organization. And, you know, what, almost over 70 years later, almost 70 years later, we're still here helping people with myasthenia gravis.
That's amazing. Well, let's talk a little bit about how funds are raised for this organization.
Sure. So we are a not-for-profit, and we really rely heavily on the generosity of donors and other fundraisers to make sure we can continue to offer the services that we do. We usually offer three or four primary fundraisers each year, one of which I know we're going to talk about today, our comedy show. But we do a number of different things. We do some lottery ticket sales. We have a golf outing in the fall. Last winter, actually for the third year in a row, we did a virtual paint and sip, which is a painting party we do online. And then we have a winery that works with us to supply wine for the event. So again, we, being a not-for-profit, being a very, you know, pretty small not-for-profit, we rely on those fundraisers to really make sure we can keep our doors open, keep our lights on, and continue to provide the services that we do.
Yeah, and you have a big one coming up. Why don't you tell us about the 8th annual Comedy for a Cause?
Yeah, and thank you again for this opportunity. The Comedy for a Cause truly is probably our largest fundraiser, anywhere from like 15% to 20% of our annual fundraising dollars come from this one event. So, you know, we really want to push it, try to get a great audience there. And this year, as you said, it's our 8th annual, but this is the second year in a row. We're going to be going back to the Elements venue in North Huntington. And I know you're familiar with that venue. It's a great, relatively new venue, really nice meeting space. And the comedians last year just loved it in terms of the acoustics and the ability to really connect with the audience. So we're going to have it there again this year. This year's event is taking place on Saturday, April 29th. And as I said, at the Elements venue in North Huntington, doors open at 6:30. We have a buffet dinner and dessert bar at 7. And then the show actually starts at 7:30. So we're really excited about this. We try to keep the tickets price reasonable. It's $50 per person, but that does include the show, the dinner, and the dessert table. We have a cash bar available for people, and we have two great comedians, Phil Hughes and Teresa Logan, and they have been on many different television programs. Phil is actually coming off a tour on a number of different cruise ships, so he's a great comedian, and Teresa as well will be our opening act with Phil as the headliner.
Oh, that sounds like it's going to be so fun. So why don't you tell us again, you know, how to get the tickets, where can they go to get more information about this?
Sure. Probably the easiest way, we do accept cash, check, credit card. But what I always tell people, the easiest way is just call our office, and we'll definitely walk you through the process. Our phone number is area code 412-566-1545. And as I said, we accept cash, check, credit card, however people would want to pay for those tickets. And we'll be happy to help them walk through that process in order to do that.
Do you have some sponsors you want to mention for this event?
You know, we're still in the process of lining up the sponsors. So, you know, we had a couple that sponsored us last year. We're hopefully they're going to be back on board this year, but we haven't locked anybody in officially yet. So no one to mention yet, but, you know, we're very hopeful we'll get two or three of our sponsors from last year back on board this year.
Why is this event one of your favorites?
I think, you know, with COVID especially, I think so many people, you know, were feeling sort of a sense of not necessarily being alone, but definitely having that desire to be able to get out and interact with people. And what better way to do that than having fun, laughing, getting to interact with people in a big event that's, you know, we still have the ability to spread out. So we're not having people, you know, sitting too close to each other. But at the same time, I really love it because it really, you know, you can just tell the joy it brings to people, not only based on how great the comedians are, but just giving them that ability to interact with each other again in a fun environment.
Oh yeah. It's going to be wonderful to be able to do that and get together and laugh and have a good time. Tell us about your board and your volunteers who helps you do all this stuff.
Yeah, we really couldn't do it without our board. We have right now, I think 14 people on our board of directors. They have work selflessly to really promote this organization. Some of them have Myasthenia Gravis themselves. Others have had family members. Some have just been interacting with the organization for so long because they really support the mission. And then, of course, our volunteers, any organization, especially a not-for-profit like us, really relies so heavily on our volunteers. And they help us staff the event, help us promote it. Really, you know, sell the tickets that evening, and really do a great job. So, you know, very, very, very proud of our volunteers and our board. And honestly, as I said before, really could not run our organization without them.
The comedians look great. I see the headliner of Phil Hughes. So he has the ventriloquist, and then Teresa Logan, she's from HBO and A&E. Looks like she's going to be a great time. How did you connect with this group? It's Slapstick Productions. Did someone connect you with them?
Yeah, actually, from the very beginning. So with our first comedy show, the organization had connected with this organization called Slapsticks Promotions. And they basically will run these comedy shows for organizations like us to put together fundraisers. So they really take a lot of the legwork out of the way for us. They line up the comedians, they print the tickets, you know, they make sure everything's booked. They bring all the lighting and sound material. So it's one of those things where, you know, having an organization like that where we're not having to worry about doing all the behind the scenes things is so helpful. And they've been a great organization to work with for sure.
Yeah, I would imagine. You know, it's just so fun to have a comedy night, and it's not something that's done all that often. So it works out well. I assume you also have the baskets and the raffles and all kinds of fun things that people should bring cash for, right?
Yeah, we have a 50-50 drawing. We do a basket raffle. We've gotten a lot of great items donated so far for the basket raffle. We also have a silent auction where we're going to have a lot of great sports and sort of pop culture memorabilia. A couple items we've already had locked in. We have some signed photos that have been donated by the Steelers that we're going to get framed and have those up for silent auction. We actually have what we're calling a winner's choice, where they get either a autographed Terry Bradshaw jersey or a Terry Bradshaw helmet, their choice, if they win that silent auction item. And then we're going to have some mystery boxes as well. As I said, some related to pop culture like Star Wars and Marvel, others sports memorabilia with Hall of Fame jerseys inside the mystery box. And one thing that we just got added recently, I'm really excited about, is a signed Alice Cooper guitar. So I'm not sure if a lot of your listeners are into Alice Cooper, but that was sort of a very unique item that we had put on for our silent auction just recently. So I'm very excited to see if anyone's interested in bidding on that.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine you've been to too many charity events where you see something like that. So that's definitely pretty neat. So you raise this money along with some other fundraisers throughout the year. Do you want to tell us about the other fundraisers?
Sure. As I said before, we have a lottery ticket that we're actually running this year in the summer. Summer usually is a little bit of slower time for us. So instead of offering all of our fundraisers in the spring, we decided to move that back into the summer. It's, you know, very simplistic based on the PA daily number. So we do sell those lottery tickets. And as I said, then we have one for the fall. It's a golf outing. We're still booking the location for that. But maybe once we do that, if you have some opportunity in the fall, maybe I could come back and talk to you a little bit about that. And then in the winter, we have our paint and sip, which last year we had over 100 participants all logging on virtually, you know, enjoying some wine from a local winery, Cavick Winery in Carnegie. And we have an art person directing the art project that evening. So we try to mix it up where we recognize where someone may not be interested in golf, but maybe really would want to come to the comedy show or something else. We try to mix it up enough where, you know, people have a lot of different ways to support us, even if every event isn't necessarily their cup of tea.
And it's not just about raising money, though. These events are also about awareness, I would imagine.
Correct. Yeah. And that's really, I'm glad you said that because, one, we really have three pillars of how we try to support patients with myasthenia gravis. The first is through education. The second is through advocacy. And the third is through awareness and support. And, these fundraisers, although, they're very important to raise those dollars to help our organization continue to really help people, it also gives me the opportunity to come on a show like this and talk a little bit about myasthenia gravis, and maybe a listener out there may have never heard of it before. So, just sort of spreads the word and raises awareness. And, so many times you hear something, and then all of a sudden, maybe a day or two later, someone you may know or someone else you hear has something based on what you just heard. So, that's one of the things we really try to do as well, is raise that awareness out in the public. And we do that through a lot of education and different programs that we have going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because, if you really read about myasthenia gravis, I think one of the major issues is not that treatment isn't available, it's that people don't seek it.
Right. Yeah. Because it is such a rare disease. Unless, you really know someone with it, or you have it yourself, or, maybe you're a healthcare professional that works with that patient population. Most people have never heard of it. And as I said before, because it may present itself similarly to some other neurologic conditions, it usually gets pushed down the list a little bit when physicians are trying to determine exactly what's going on, with the patient. So it sometimes can take years to properly diagnose someone with myasthenia gravis. So, just being able to raise that awareness, get the name out there a little bit more, to make it a little more, brand aware, for lack of a better term, or top of mind aware, is something that we really try to do. And the other thing we're doing this year is a lot more professional education. That's something that, when we would talk to different doctors or nurses or social workers, a lot of them would say, "Well, we heard about that when we were in school getting training, but I've never seen a patient with that disease, or I've only seen one or two patients with that disease." So we're really trying to make it much more of a professional education, not just patient and family education, this year as well.
Totally makes sense. I mean, why not go to the providers? There's probably, multiple cases that are undiagnosed out there, and nobody's going to know unless they have a doctor who is aware of that. So, good stuff there. Jim Joyce is the executive director of the Myasthenia Gravis Association of Western Pennsylvania. He's our guest today on Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. We're going to take a break, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy, here with Jim Joyce. He's the executive director of the Myasthenia Gravis Association of Western Pennsylvania. Jim, tell us about how you connected with this organization. How did you end up as its leader?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So, probably close to almost 25, 30 years ago now, one of my first jobs out of school, I worked at Mercy Hospital and was over in the clinic area at Mercy Hospital. And the office right across the hallway from mine was an organization that I had never heard of, could barely pronounce the name, but they were great people. And, really, I could tell they were dedicated to their patients. And that, of course, was the Myasthenia Gravis Association of Western Pennsylvania. And fast forward, 20, 25 years, and due to some different things that went on in my life, I was looking for a job and recognized that I really enjoyed doing a lot of the grassroots work and the fundraising type work and promoting, a smaller organization. And this opportunity presented itself. The executive director before me was retiring, so had applied for the job, talked to a lot of the different board members as well as the staff. And the more I talked to them, the more I knew it was going to be a good fit for me. And I was very fortunate that it was also a good fit for them. So I'm going on my fourth year with the organization. A lot of that has been sort of related to COVID type activities. So I still say I'm not sure if I truly know what running this organization is totally about, but have worked hard to make sure we're doing a lot of things virtually as well as in person when it makes sense for us to do that to best support the community and our patients and their families. And as I said before, healthcare professionals that may come across these people at some point during their careers.
Well, I mean, you've spent your life in healthcare, right? I mean, that's
I
been your
have, yep.
job for many years, and so I'm sure you've seen a lot of this. And I do think you bring a lot of skills to the table that would help this organization advance. And I think that's important. So if you are out there and you are a young, aspiring healthcare executive and in the making, and you want to do something like this, Jim, you know, what, how do you get to be the head of a nonprofit? You know, what do you go to school for? What kind of internships do you look for? And how do you land a job like that?
Sure. So, I mean, I know personally, my background, I have my master's in health administration and business administration. So I was sort of more on the business track of things in order to get to a position like this. I know other leaders of nonprofit organizations. Some of them are nurses or more clinical in nature. So that's one of the really exciting things. I think, you know, in terms of nonprofit sector, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter in terms of what your degree may be in, but I think it definitely matters in terms of where your heart is and, you know, what your skill sets are and what you like to do. Obviously, working for a small not-for-profit, you know, you're not working with a large group of hundreds of thousands of people. You're working with a smaller team. You need to be able to really work with a board who, you know, also have other jobs or other things that are going on in their lives. So you have to be able to manage properly your interactions with that board. But for someone young, just maybe starting college or in college or just graduating from college, I would say a couple things. Number one, try to find a mentor. You know, there's organizations where they could volunteer, or you know, even if sometimes they're looking for part-time help. Find that mentor that, you know, they have the job that you eventually want to get to, whether it's in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it may be, and really pick their brain. And one thing I've found, you know, as I was younger and even now, people who are in positions of leadership are most of the time, if not always, willing to help an individual if they ask questions, if they're truly, you know, energetic and want to learn, that people are willing to help get them going in the right direction. Because in a lot of times, they'll see themselves, you know, 15, 20 years ago. The other thing is that, you know, experience, you can't beat experience. So if you have the ability to either volunteer with an organization, or as I said, maybe if they have like part-time positions, you know, get involved. And so many organizations like ours, we would love for younger people to get involved, you know, help us with our social media, put together fundraisers that might attract a younger population. And those are all things that are such good experiences, but also resume builders. So, you know, when they're going for their first job or they're maybe trying to move up in a company, if they can say, yes, I have done X, Y, and Z for this organization, and that also gives you the ability to get good references as well. So that would be a few tips, you know, right off the bat. But I think it's one of those things where, you know, working in not-for-profit, you know, it can be very exciting, it can be nerve-wracking. And you know, it's one of those things where if you like having your hands involved in a lot of different things and maybe not specializing in one thing, it's definitely an area that younger people, I think, would thrive in for sure.
Oh my goodness, yes. And you know, that younger connection, I mean, look at how marketing and communications and technology has changed. I even see you have virtual support groups now, right? I mean,
Right.
you have a virtual support series, right? That you
We
do
do,
all online. So you want to talk about that?
And so many things, you know, because of COVID changed, and especially, you know, a lot of the people we serve, because they have autoimmune diseases, you know, don't necessarily feel as comfortable, even
Oh,
though,
right.
you know,
Yes.
we're coming out of the pandemic, we're, you know, we're past the pandemic, things are getting back to somewhat normal. You know, they still have some concern, and rightfully so, about meeting in smaller spaces or, you know, with a large group of people. So we started that during COVID, and we've been keeping it going. Now we also are beginning to offer more things in person as well, because we have heard from a lot of people that, you know, they don't really like the virtual meeting setup. They prefer to be in person, you know, where they can talk and see the interactions with other people there. So we're trying to walk that line between offering both the virtual and the in-person programming. But our virtual programming has been very successful. We've lined up a lot of different speakers. Last year, There were several companies that had started new treatments for myasthenia gravis. So a lot of the programming we did last year was centered around those treatments because so many people were interested in hearing about it to see if it was appropriate for them. This year, we're focusing a little bit more on that advocacy and sort of being your own best champion. So our first lecture, which was in February, first education support group session, centered around just preparing for your doctor visits and how to speak to your doctor and making sure you have worthwhile physician interactions, because one of the things we hear a lot is that, physicians are very busy. They may only have 10 or 15 minutes to spend with a patient before they have to move on to their next patient. And that's no fault of the physician. That's just sort of how healthcare is today. So it's very important for a patient to be able to be very specific and direct and have a good game plan of how they're going to spend their 10 or 15 minutes with that physician. The one we have coming up in April is centering around elder care planning for someone with a chronic illness. So, talking about retirement savings, talking about long-term care placement, those types of issues, which unfortunately, whether you have a chronic illness or not, many times are conversations that just get pushed off. So we're trying to really empower our patients again for those types of conversations with either because they have the disease or maybe a family member does. And then later on in the year, we're looking at talking to with some experts about how to best travel with a chronic illness, just being prepared, making sure you are safe and are prepared to travel. We're talking about workplace accommodations a little later in the year. So we have a lot of good topics. And again, if anyone is interested in those, even if you don't have myasthenia gravis, a lot of those are more global in nature. If you'd like to participate, just call our office. We can send you a listing of all the education support group sessions this year. And that number is 412-566-1545.
So we have just a few minutes left. One more time, we're talking to Jim Joyce. He's the executive director of the Myasthenia Gravis Association of Western PA. Why don't you give us the lowdown one more time on the big fundraiser, the comedy show that's coming up?
Yeah, so and again, thank you for this opportunity. It's our 8th annual Comedy for a Cause, and all the proceeds will benefit the Myasthenia Gravis Association of Western Pennsylvania and all the free care and free programming we offer to patients. That's taking place on Saturday, April 29th. So that's about 6 weeks away or so, 5 or 6 weeks away. It's taking place at the Elements venue in North Huntington, which is a great venue. Doors open at 6:30. Buffet dinner and dessert table will be at 7, and then the show starts at 7:30. We're usually wrapping up around 9:30 or 10 o'clock, so it's not a super late evening for anyone, but a really fun time. Tickets are $50 per person and includes the show and dinner. We'll have a cash bar and a lot of great prizes through our 50-50 drawing, basket raffle, and silent auction. So if anyone's interested in attending or you just want some more information, give us a call at 412-566-1545. That's 412-566-1545. And last year especially, we had a lot of groups coming in with, 8, 10, 12 people. We can accommodate big groups like that because of how the seating is. They had a great time. It was almost like they had a little re almost a mini reunion with either their family or friends. And this was a great way to do that.
So give us the website and any social media as well.
Sure. So the website is www.mgawpa.org. So that's Myasthenia Gravis Association of Western Pennsylvania, so mgawpa.org. And if you just look on Facebook, same thing, mgawpa. We're also on Twitter as well. And that's probably the best way to reach us, as I said before, calling the office.
Jim, you are a wealth of information about this rare disease, and I know you're doing wonderful work, and you care very deeply about the people impacted by this. I hope your fundraiser goes very, very well.
Thank you, Jen. And once again, thank you so much for this opportunity.
Jim Joyce is the executive director of the Myasthenia Gravis Association of Western Pennsylvania. You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. If you have an idea for a guest on the show, we'd love to hear from you. So make sure you reach out to WHJB so we can get that person or that organization or that nonprofit on the show. It's always good to hear from old friends and new. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Thanks for listening.